The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And I'm back. It's been ages since I've done one, but I got a whole bunch set up in Niagara. I got more in South Africa. So there's going to be a lot of podcasts in the next month. I'm joined by Vadim Chelikov, the head winemaker at Cassava Vineyards here in Niagara. Vadim, thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. And let's start here. This place makes award-winning wine. This place makes incredibly high-end Syrah and really good Bordeaux blends. Like, just incredible stuff. And you're the head winemaker, so this is a fancy job. It's very illustrious. And yet at 8:30 this morning, what were you doing?
Well, I was starting off the day with getting the floors clean, because I believe that you can't really start cooking anything in the kitchen or in the cellar without having the equipment and the floors clean. So that's my start of the day.
And I love it. I love it because, as I always say all the time, is that it's one thing I learned is that being a winemaker, it's not as fancy as you would see on TV or movies. It's you with a hose making sure everything is clean before the start of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm the dirtiest person in the vineyards. The biggest clumps of dirt are on my boots usually. And, the start of any process in the cellar was the cleaning, and it usually finishes with the cleaning too.
Yeah. let's start here a little bit with you and falling in love with wine. And I believe it started with family trips to Germany and France and Italy when you were young.
Yes, well, my affair to wines actually started off, as you mentioned, with the family. It was always part of the family dinners. The wine was always part of the educational experience when I was much younger. And for Ontario regulation, I was underage for consumption of alcohol. But my parents and family made sure that it's more of a educational experience rather than consumption of the alcohol. So the story really began when I was about 4 years old, when my grandfather asked me to taste some ice wine and describe what I'm tasting, what I'm...
Really?
Yes. And he wouldn't leave me alone until I would draw it all on the paper. And I think that was my first kind of eye-opening that, there's a huge world of flavors, tastes, and fantastic things out there.
All right, I'm going to interrupt for half a second because I'm now annoyed. I'm annoyed now at my nephews and nieces over the years, because I would put a glass in front of them and say, what do you get here? And they would just look at me and go, wine, or it smells gross. And then there's you as four, doing aromatic notes for ice wine.
Well, yeah, that was not exactly the most accessible things back in the post-Soviet Union and one of the republics where I grew up, mm-hmm. in Kazakhstan. So for me, that was the experience of something outside of the accessibility zone. And I was just genuinely interested in flavors and different nuances of different foods and different beverages. So, yeah, I actually kind of became fascinated with the world of wine.
And it is so different, isn't it, between the way that North America and Europe view wine. We're here in North America, keep it away from the children. It's not that they think it's dangerous, but, oh, no, we must restrict it. Versus in Europe, it's part of the meal. It's food. It's not, hey, let's get our 11-year-old drunk. But it's treated with such a different energy than it is here.
Well, absolutely. That's a major cultural shift that I observed myself arriving to Canada when I was 14 years old with my parents. And the funny story, coming into Canada for the first time and landing in Pearson, my first thought was, well, I need to grab some wine for dinner tonight. I walked into LCBO, and of course I got ID, that being 14 years old, denied the purchase. And I think that's kind of how my professional journey really has started off here in Canada in the winemaking.
I wish I could have been there at the LCBO when they said, can I see your ID? Here it is. And they're like, get the hell out of my store. Yeah,
pretty much so, yes. My cash was no good.
Okay, so let's go from you getting booted from the By the way, do you remember what you were buying? There's no way you remember. Do you remember what you were trying to pick up at 14?
Oh, absolutely. It was a 2-4 of Heineken cans and a bottle of Chateauneuf du Pape.
Okay. That's a good night. That's a good. By the way, good on you, high roller. You're not even going for the simple Cote de Rhone. You're like, oh, give me the Chateau Neuf du Pape, and you didn't get the Coors Light. You got the Heineken. I love it. So let's go from your journey from getting rejected at the LCBO to you becoming a cellar hand here at Cassava. I'd love to hear just some of that journey.
Oh, absolutely. It's actually quite an interesting long journey. It might take us a long time to go step by step, but to make it more or less brief, through the high school, I would experiment at home with ciders, with easy stuff to make, like fruit wines and whatnot, and that just kind of became more of a side hobby.
So you were making this at home as a hobby?
Yeah. And my parents would enjoy that, you know, along with myself. My sister was still a little bit young, and still to this day, she's not the biggest appreciator of what we do. Mm-hmm. In particular, she's an opera singer, so she needs to be careful about her vocal cords. But from there, I went to university at Western in London, Ontario, and that side gig as a hobby kind of started to expand as my peers, most of them being legal drinking age, started mm-hmm. to appreciate what I was doing, and a lot of the pressure was to make better quality, work with the grapes, work with some beers, possibly distilling some. So my range of interest grew exponentially, and of course my skill level also has grown quite a bit as I took a bunch of courses which were directly or sometimes indirectly related to the winemaking and cider production and well as some brewing.
Did you in parties at Western? You must have. They must have loved inviting you. You brought the good stuff. They're bringing, you know, Ernest and Gallo. They're bringing the White Zinfandel, and you're bringing the high end Syrah from Rhone.
Well, at that point in time, I didn't really have an access to good grapes. I was doing a lot of stuff with the winemaking kit, so
It
took a while for me to really bring the quality up. But yes, the recognition really started off the bat, and after a few years in university, my focus really switched from what I was doing in the pre-med towards the winemaking and viticulture here.
You said pre-med?
Yes, I was aiming for anesthesiology.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then that leads me to the next question. Your parents grew up with wine, and it's part of your family culture. Was your family happy when you said, I'm not going to be a doctor, but I'm going to try to make some wine here in Ontario?
No, it took him a long time to turn around and really accept my choice because, well, I was jumping off of really getting into the med school in 2 years and giving up my scholarships and basically going straight to the vineyards for a minimal wage job.
I bet they feel better about it now if you give them some back vintage, some of your old Cab Franc that I got to try here last time, which was crazy. I'm sure your family feels better about it now than they did then.
Oh yes, they sure do. They actually been really supportive in the last couple of years during my transition into the head winemaker shoes. So big kudos to my parents, not just to starting off on my interest and journey in the wine, but also to support me in professional switch into it.
What were those first couple of years like for you? 2011, you joined up here, and you already talked about enrolling. You enrolled at Niagara College, but what was life like for you, I guess, 10, 11 years ago?
Well, I think just like any student, it's rental housing with a lot of roommates who really like to drink your wine, mm-hmm. Especially when you're not there.
Yeah.
it was quite challenging for a while, coming up through the minimum wage and really a lot of work. It's farming, so expect 60 hours a week during the harvest or more. But it does have its own benefits with a lot of social life. There's a lot of connection. Like the entire family really, the entire industry really feels like a small family where we all know each other, we support each other, and we, I think, move together as a collective forward.
It's one thing I've noticed, and it depends where you are in the world. Some parts of the world, they're very supportive. Other parts, you know, especially like in France, much more competitive. I imagine, you know, especially then, like, it was all about trying to get the message that what we're making here is really good, which was a harder message to get out in 2012 than it is now.
Well, yeah, absolutely. It was the support of the Ontarians with our customers who really starting to shift towards wines from their own backyard. We were able to move this far forward. And again, support of the peers, I think this is probably one of the biggest thing that we do have here in Ontario going for us versus some of the other regions, as you mentioned, France being extremely competitive. I mean, the guy next door is probably going to recommend not going to his neighbor.
Yeah.
Where over here, I would be pleased to recommend someone else if we particularly don't carry a great varietal, or at the moment we don't have a restaurants or food options on the weekends. I always love to recommend somebody else local, so we, again, collectively move forward.
You mentioned the 60-hour work week. I was wondering if you could tell the listeners, what is that? What does the last hour feel like on the hardest day of harvest? And what's the next morning feel like on the body?
Well, actually, not so bad.
No, not good.
No, absolutely not. Because by that time, you're usually running on adrenaline. Mm-hmm. Last year, 2021, I went for 9 weeks straight with no days off whatsoever, and sometimes working 12 to 16 hours. In the end of the day, you feel really rewarded by the work that you've done, especially if you've done it really well. Honestly, the 9-10 weeks that I worked straight last fall, I didn't even notice until the last day. And then literally the last hour, I missed it. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go and continue on and do it all over again.
So that's both a bit of a glutton for punishment, but also we do get addicted to satisfaction. The satisfaction of a job well done is often more emotionally rewarding than just fun. You know, fun is, I was out at a party, had a great time, and that satiates, but working 12-hour days for all those weeks, there is that sense of accomplishment that can't be replaced.
Well, absolutely. I sometimes think of myself as an artist, and just like any artist, they will step back at the end of the workday, at the end of the picture that they've painted, and they will look and reflect at it, and they can really appreciate and connect to what they've done. And similar here, at the end of a harvest, when everything's done fermenting, pressing, when red wines are in the barrel, I taste them, and I take a step back, and I really enjoy and appreciate what we've done here.
All right, I want to jump ahead because you said something about being an artist. So one of your bottles of your signature Syrah, how much of that is artist? How much of that is scientist?
I would say half and half. Mm-hmm. Definitely one cannot go without the other, at least in my belief, in my opinion. You need to have a pretty solid foundation in the science in order to be able to make the decisions that you do. However, you know, every year, especially here in a cool climate, Ontario gives us the challenges which are probably never been encountered by a winemaker in particular area. So some of the challenges last year kept me awake at night, but when we overcame them the morning after, it was very, very rewarding to see the results.
How different was 2021 versus 2020? 2020 was such a great year that every winemaker admits it was easy, and winemakers never want to admit anything's easy because it's not easy. But it just seemed like, how different was 20 versus 21?
Well, I mentioned every vintage here in Ontario has its own challenge. Mm-hmm. Some of the challenges of 2020 were including quick acidity loss. We do pride ourselves on the Bordeaux Reds, which we sometimes will hang into late November if the acid can hang on continue ripening them and getting the grapes better for the better wine. Now, 2020 didn't really allow us to do that very very much. We were pretty much forced to harvest most of our red grapes earlier than we usually would. Because
when did you harvest?
They came in the beginning of November.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you were saying, sorry to interrupt, this is just to give the context for the listener. So it was early November in 2020. What was it last year?
Well, last year was a different challenge. Last year, we were hoping to get them ripened. They did get to that point, but they started to break apart with the enormous pressure from rain, the fog, mm-hmm. and the humidity, coinciding with very high temperatures in the mid-October. So those grapes came in the end of October. So I finished the harvest by the last day of October in 2021.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so it's... And because some places I've talked to, they'll pick even into mid-December.
Yep.
But that's like ice cellars. So I can never pronounce it correctly. All right. One thing I'm curious about is how different a lifestyle, or in terms of job, is assistant winemaker versus winemaker? How much of a jump is that?
Well, I think it all depends on where you are, the size of the company you work for, the structure that they do have. Some wineries are big enough to have 2, 3, 4 assistant winemakers, which would all have their own areas. And I would presume that the jump from those shoes into the head winemaker of a facility like such will be much more drastic as it was for me here at Cassava. We're a small winery from the very get-go. It was between myself and John Tooman, who was the head winemaker up until end of 2018. So I worked with him side by side, and I got to learn and see all of the decision-making processes, as well as all the cleaning parts. Mm-hmm. But when you do see that involvement very closely with the head winemaker, you start to it's very much like mentorship. You do pick up some of the good habits. You try to avoid some of the bad habits, and you do find your own style after a few years on your own. And I think I'm pretty comfortable and happy where I am at this point.
What are some of the bad habits? Not saying necessarily of you, but what are some of the bad habits of a winemaker?
Well, every winemaker is known for a little bit of procrastination on the paperwork. Mm-hmm. That is definitely something that I have been working hard to correct. And I love my books. Now I love my paperwork. So we're good there.
How much more pressure, did you feel more pressure when you graduated, when you took over from assistant to head winemaker here at Cassava?
There was a little bit of a transition, and yes, there was a little bit of a pressure because now all the core decisions really landed on me, between the decision on the cork size, cork type, all the way down to every single little supply. So, you know, it is a business, and you do want to make sure that you are getting supplies which are economically feasible for the product that you're producing. But at the same time, you do want to be on the top of your game, and you do want to source the best possible products. You know, nobody wants to see the glass shatter in their fridge. We do want to source really high-quality products.
You mentioned economics. Before you got here, Cassava, and I'm just doing a little bit of research, I didn't know this, that they were the first vineyard in Ontario to plant Syrah 2 decades or so ago. I was wondering, I don't know if you ever talked to the owner, Michael, about this, because there had to be some pressure economically, just plant what everyone knows versus plant what you think works best for this terroir. I imagine that could have been a nerve-wracking decision.
Well, I'm kind of glad that it wasn't me.
Yes.
on the economical side of that decision. I am very glad that it was made from our perspective. Michael Cassava, the owner of Cassava Vineyards and Winery, was always fascinated with the wines from the Rhone region in France, so very heavily based on the Syrah. He particularly enjoys the Northern Rhone style of wines, where you will see Syrah co-fermented with Viognier. So he made that leap of faith, jump, and imported some Syrah wines to Ontario. He planted them in a very particular spots on our vineyard, which enjoys a really nice microclimate with a longer growing season, slightly warmer temperatures through the summer, slightly drier fall, because it is sloped and water drains really well. So over the years, the Syrah really took on this property, and we're really happy to house this grape varietal and then craft fantastic wines from it.
Well, I have to say, you guys came on my radar a year ago. A friend of mine, Lindsay, who's starting to get into wine herself, we were at a cottage, and she brought a bottle of the Cassava Syrah, and I'm like, oh yeah, I recognize that label. I've driven past there, but I just hadn't been to see you guys. And, you know, we were trying different wines, and then right when we tried the Cassava Syrah, I was like, holy shit, what is this? You know, what is this wine? We need to circle back. And it's incredible. Like, again, you guys, and I'm glad that Michael decided on this, because I think a lot of times the pressure is to, okay, just plant Chardonnay and plant Cabernet Sauvignon. That's what everyone knows. Even though, unless you're in a really warm microclimate, it's kind of hard to make, especially 100% Cabernet year after year here in Ontario.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest challenge, is to be consistent from vintage to vintage, because, well, you do want to plant something that will give you the return back year after year. You don't necessarily want to plant something that can only ripen once every 5 years, and mm-hmm. then every 1 year out of 10 probably will lose 50% due to cold damage. So that's kind of why Syrah, I think, it was a, it, it, was a leap of faith for planting here in Ontario, but discovering that we do have that microclimate pockets was extremely beneficial. And it could have been a big failure. Mm-hmm. Now 22 years down the road, almost 25 for the oldest block on the property, we are very fortunate to say that it's a great home for it and it's doing good things for us.
And also it's, you know, when people ask about Ontario wines, I'm like, it's just better quality now than it was 20 years ago. And people ask why. And the boring answer is because it takes time. Because it takes time for everyone here to learn what to grow, what to plant, and also just vines to get older, yes. You know. And I mean, that's the great thing about here is you guys have a head start over, I would imagine, a lot of other Canadian wineries dipping their toes in Syrah because you've been doing it for so long.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really been a long journey. The question of, well, why we're so much better over the course of the last 20, 25 years as a collective industry, we are learning. You're absolutely right. You know, Bordeaux had centuries of experience on us. They know every single plot, every single spot on their vineyards. We are just discovering those hot microclimate spots along the escarpment in Niagara on the Lake. You mentioned ice cellars. Big fan of those guys as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that will come with the experience, but also we are looking into a major advancement in the technology in the supply chains. So what was unavailable to us 25 years, 30 years ago is now more of a everyday kind of thing. That there's many small things that you can twig your wines with if you're not happy completely with them. I'm talking about the barrels. I'm talking about different type of toast, different type of oak selection, grain selection. So once you get into that whole cooperage, it's another rocket science on the side of the winemaking.
Yeah, in France, they have like 500 years ago, you had bored monks wanting to make wine and champagne, and you know, so they had a couple years. I was reading about Cassaba doing well in some Northern Rhone wine competitions. I was wondering about that.
Yes, we successfully competed at the Syrah du Mont for a number of years with mm-hmm. A number of different wines produced on our property from our own grape. We've brought in bronze for a couple of wines. We also worked really hard at getting our wines to the decanter competition in London, England, mm-hmm. and also showed really well with the silver medal awarded to our 2018 Reserve Syrah a year past.
How good does it feel when a European who knows nothing about Canadian wine tries yours and is both impressed and confused?
Well, it's an incredible feeling because it's a pat on the back. It's the feeling of accomplishment that you did your job right. You did something good, and somebody was impressed and really enjoyed it. So, in the end of the day, it is a very rewarding feeling when your wines win an award. I think for me personally, the biggest reward is when the wine sells out.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny that is kind of the ultimate, because sometimes in a wine competition, there's odd variables, and you can win gold one day, but if you have the same wine 3 days later, maybe you only get silver just because of the peculiarities of judges' taste. But you're right, nothing says we're doing a good job then. How much do we got left back there? And it's like, we got nothing left back there. Going back for a second, you talked about the former head winemaker, John Tooman. I'm curious, what did you learn from him?
Well, John Tooman is an incredible winemaker. He was an amazing mentor at basically teaching how to structureize the entire winemaking process for multiple different grape varietals. And, you know, we can bring in some whites and the reds in the same day, and they all need a completely different approach and ability to multitask and to see the bigger picture from just the, you know, the grape and the decision to bring in the grape today. And I think that was probably one of the strongest things that I picked up from John.
Is that the most stressful thing? Deciding the day, okay, let's get harvesting.
Yes, it's very stressful because, well, we are on the mercy of Mother Nature. So even though that at 6 a.m. it may be a beautiful, gorgeous, sunny, dry morning, in Ontario we always say, wait 5 minutes, the weather will change. So that's the nerve-wracking thing. That's, you know, you get the crew ready, you have 40, 50 people show up at 6:30 a.m. and at 7 it starts to drizzle, and by 8:30 it's a full-out thunderstorm.
Yeah.
Obviously, that is something that's always is on the back of my mind on a harvest day is, are we going to have a good day in terms of weather today? Are we going to have enough time to pick it all before the storm hits? Or should we move this? And well, yeah.
I bet you watch the Weather Network more than the average person.
I do have 5 different apps, and we do have from the GGO provided weather station on the grounds here at Cassava. So
yeah.
Yes, I very carefully monitor all possible channels.
So talk about, we'll go in a different direction. I wanted to get your thoughts on sustainability and organic and all that. And as I parked my car in your parking lot, you've got 2 different electric car charging stations. So clearly when you arrive here, you realize that, you know, this is something that is important for you as a winemaker and as a philosophy, as a winery. I was wondering if you could be like, people always hear this term when they come into a winery. Oh yeah, you know, we're organic and we're a sustainable winemaking operation. Can you give some specifics for everyone listening? What does it mean to be sustainable?
Absolutely. Sustainability was always the focus of Michael Cassava before he even got into the farming vines and grapes here in Ontario. The idea behind sustainability, I think, is to leave as little footprint after our work, or after what we do, so we can pass it on to our children, to our grandchildren, and continue from generation to generation producing crops, producing grapes, producing fantastic wines, just so that chain doesn't end on our generation. So conservation of water, conservation of energy, reuse of a lot of the materials, all of those factors, I think, line up into the leaving less carbon footprint behind us. But also it does involve to using less harsher chemicals when we're cleaning. So a lot of this stuff that we use here is very much household. There's nothing that will contain bleach in the winery, period, that is banned from our facility. Again, that's just the general focus that we are hoping to go into the future, respecting the land where we are, respecting where the land came from, the past, the history, and moving forwards with the ability for the next generations to keep doing what we're doing, and doing it better, hopefully, than what we are doing it now.
Yeah. And how much harder is it? Would it be easier as a winemaker to just throw out the idea of organic or sustainability?
Oh, it'd be very easy. I mean, there's a lot of conventional farmers out there that simply cannot have an ability to switch to the organic or biodynamic or sustainable ways, mainly because the size of the farm operation is just too big to bring in a lot of hand labor, a lot of the sustainable practices. So for a big farmer, I can't blame them. They when they have to spray, they have to spray, because otherwise they lose 100% and then they're out of the game. For us, we do have that ability because we're small. Only 15.3 acres are planted on the property, so that doesn't take as much of a labor. And of course, being conscious about energy consumption, that is another big thing that we really are focusing on.
So, Vadim, just go over a little bit of your portfolio. What should people know about your wines? And you know, we'll obviously focus more on the reds. But when I came here last time, I really enjoyed the Pinot Gris. You know, that one just, it had a little bit more depth than I was expecting going in. And yeah, I just wonder if you could talk. Let's talk a little bit of your whites. What would you tell people about your whites?
Well, every single wine that I do touch, every single wine that is coming out under Cassava brand is going to have amazing amount of attention, a lot of hand labor dedicated towards it. So even though that's 2 of my SKUs, an oak Chardonnay, which is an amazing summer white, which sells through the LCBO vintage after vintage, scoring gold medals at the All Canadian Nationals and Ontario Wine Championships for us year after year, gets just as much focus and attention as our Reserve Syrah, which is a signature flagship wine of the winery. You mentioned Pinot Gris. That is something that is incredible to work with, because our aspect to the white wines is to make them different, to make them unique, to make them outstanding, and keeping the high quality. So for the Pinot Gris, the little skin contact went a long way, and that's what I think grew the body of it.
Right.
The focus is to make sure that every single wine is at its best that it can be, but it's also unique.
How would you describe your Reserve Syrah?
It's velvet in the glass. Mm-hmm. With a little touch of black pepper.
Yeah. and it's kind of an odd question. Why is it so good?
I have to give a big, big kudos to the vineyards and the our vineyard management team. There's no wine without the grape, so
right.
You got to start with a really, really outstanding grape. Now, of course, the vintage conditions, like 2018, gave us a very dry, very long season, ripening them very well. The acidity never fell apart, and we were able to bring the fruit in very clean, just like in 2020. From there, the winemaking approach really kicks in, and involvement of the hand pump. From there, only free-run press wine being separated into the newer French oak barrels only and ages for about 16 months or so. So the entire cycle of production of that reserve Syrah was quite a lengthy, but it was very, very rewarding.
Do you guys own, are all the wines made from your own property, or is there some stuff where you have relationships with other grape growers?
Oh, no, that's a great question. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely want to give credit to the local growers that we have been working with mm-hmm. for many, many years, over two decades now, with some of them, who produce fantastic fruits of the quality rivaling to our own grapes. But when we're talking about, I mentioned two LCBO SKUs, the Anok Chardonnay and the Cabernet, the volumes that demanded by the LCBO are much bigger than our vineyard could ever possibly even imagine to produce. We don't even grow Chardonnay.
Yeah.
So we do have to work with the local growers who are very willing to uphold our beliefs and our strategy on the maintenance of the vineyards, keeping it as sustainable as possible, using as little pesticide herbicides as possible, and again, employing more hand labor than you usually would see.
I think it's also important for the listeners to, and this is something you're going to hear on a lot of these podcasts, is to start looking for words like Foxcroft, Wismer, Parkey, and there's a lot of other ones. I think it's important, and you know, there's always a debate about this. I was debating with J.P. Collat a year or so ago about raising the awareness of the very specific vineyards. But I think it's important because, you know, anyone who drinks wine from France, you know, you look for the vineyard, you look for the appellation. I think it's important for us here in Ontario to go, oh, okay, that's a Wismer wine from Wismer Vineyard. Okay, that's, you know, that at least denotes it should be high quality because that's a good place to get grapes.
Oh, fantastic mention there. If we remember going back to hot spots, the particular microclimates, and France having centuries of experience over us, I think in Ontario we are going in that direction as well. Inevitably, we will going to distinguish particular vineyards which produce fruits of a particular quality, of a particular flavor profile. Not to say some neighboring vineyard is not as good as the one that we mentioned. It just produces different characters, different terroir, and I think that's a great direction that Ontario industry is moving toward to, by highlighting some of the areas, some of the zones which are perfectly suited for the grapes that they're growing and are known for the particular terroir, as the French would say.
Yeah, it's to me it's such a big thing. When I came in here, you were you guys have an event coming up. As we're taping this, this is on Wednesday, the 13th of April. So we're getting close to the Easter long weekend. Are you taking part in it? Like, how many of these events are you hosting, emceeing, speaking, or is it other people that do it?
Well, this is the first in-house event that we're hosting since the COVID has hit.
How excited are you for that?
Oh, I'm absolutely stoked. I cannot wait for Saturday. Mm-hmm. I will be prepping the winery for the next couple of days, arranging everything. I will be on the floor for this event, mm-hmm. Personally, because I would love to invite our club members and socialize with them. As of course, they didn't have a chance to do any in-house, any open houses with us for 2 years. But throughout the COVID, I was very much involved virtually with our customers, with our clientele and the club members, hosting now two annual sessions of 12 Wines of Christmas, where we taste two wines every Friday nights, starting from usually the first Friday after New Year's. I do have another virtual event coming up on April 29th where Michael Cassava is going to join me to explain and tell the whole story of how Syrah got here, his idea behind it. He will share some of the background knowledge on exactly how it was imported here. And we're going to taste some really incredible wines from the library featuring 2012 vintage and 2015.
Cool. Cool. Okay. Okay. I want to get back to the library question a second. And, you know, I know you have to be political about this, but how much do doing virtual wine events suck? I know it's important and it's gratifying for the wine club members. I ask this because I've hosted virtual wine events versus doing them live with people. And just doing it live with people is so much better than when you're, you know, can you mute your Zoom and this? Oh, it's so annoying.
Oh, I can definitely agree. It is much more gratifying to see faces next to you in the room. Mm-hmm. It's a different energy, I think, when you're speaking in front of live audience. I really miss doing it with the different wine clubs, which I was involved with events for Cassava Vineyards before COVID. Now, I do have to say I absolutely love virtual events. Maybe it's because of the audience that we do attract. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Very focused, and they ask amazing questions at the end of the session. So I personally absolutely love virtual events. They are something that I always look forward to, and I wish I could do more of them.
Okay, well, that's where you and I differ. Oh, God, I need to be there in person. The only benefit I see is it allows you to reach out geographically. Yes. To people all over the world. That is, now, that part is cool. It's just the, oh, wait, they're frozen. Oh, they're muted. Oh, they're unmuted and just all of that. Anyway, you mentioned about being able to try library wines. And when I was here for a tasting a couple of weeks ago, I got to try a couple 10-plus-year-old, and not just Syrahs. I got to try some of the, I believe it was like a Cab Franc and a Bordeaux blend. And, you know, I mean, just so alive. But we'll go with your Syrahs. How will they change over the next 10 years?
Well, every wine is going to undergo some change. Mm-hmm. All of our wines that we do produce are intended for aging. Either it be a $50-$95 Cabernet mm-hmm. or it's a $60 Reserve Syrah. They will change quite drastically. They start off very fruity. They're maybe a little bit aggressive on the reserve side in terms of the tannins, but they do have that richness, that full body, that drive that will take them into the future. As they do age, they will mellow down. You'll see more velvety characters. You'll see a little bit more tertiary characters, more mushroom, more earthy undertones. But the fruit, that's kind of the highlight of the entire winemaking in the brand here, Cassava. We do want the wines to be fruit-driven. We want them to be very quaffable, enjoyable, and hopefully more enjoyable with time.
This is it could be an awkward question, but I think it's an important one because I will hear from people that don't or just dipping their toe in Canadian wine, and they'll be like, "Oh my God, I'm spending $40 on a bottle of Canadian wine?" And sometimes I want to backhand slap them and go, "But would you have a problem with that in other parts of the world?" I'm going to imagine you guys don't make crazy amounts of profit off your wine. I'm going to guess you're not all multimillionaires because you're gouging the customer. So it's kind of a long way of asking if you could explain to the listener why it is just the Reserve Syrah is going to cost $60. Like why is it that cost?
Exclusivity. We are talking about the 15.3-acre property here at Cassava, which produces about 250 to 300 cases of Reserve Syrah, and that vintage can only happen once, maybe twice every 5 years or so, mm-hmm. right? So the availability of those wines is quite less than what you will see available through LCBO from other countries at, you know, $20 range. So I think when we compare Ontario $40 wine versus what you can get at LCBO at $20, you're talking about the exclusivity, the attention to the terroir, and of course the labor costs are a little bit higher than you know, in Spain mm-hmm. or Argentina. So we do want to have a decent wages for our laborers, for our our workers here in Ontario, we do want to make sure that they have a good standard of living. But at the same time, on the other end, we don't want to overcharge the customer. You're right, we don't make fortunes off of
profit margin, I would imagine.
Very, very slim.
Yeah.
But we are a business in the end of the day. We do need to operate. We do want to make sure to provide a good standard of living to the people we do employ.
Yeah, and that, I think that's important. People just don't realize that it still is an overall business, and that why does it cost more here than in Chile? Well, look at the wages, you know, for all the staff. It's just part of every country has its own different local economy. Where do you see yourself? We'll end on this Cassava has certainly made a name for itself, and obviously will continue. Do you have any sort of clear view of your own future?
Yes, absolutely. From the moment I got into the professional winemaking, leaving University of Western Ontario, the plan was to always pursue my own vineyard, my own winery, my mm-hmm. own operation, and my own brand. Either I'll branch out into other beverages or whatever other farming aspects of it. I mean, I love all of it. I want to stay with Cassava for as long as it's possible because I absolutely love this place. I love the people I work with. I love the mentality of the brand. And, of course, the product is, well, it speaks for itself.
Yep.
But yes, in the future, I would love to see myself on my own vineyards, tending to my own vines and promoting more Ontario wines.
And what grape would it be? Like if someone said, okay, Vadim, we've got your own winery set up. It's going to be the escarpment, but you only get one red and you get one white.
Oh.
What are those? I know it's so hard. It's so hard. You can only take one red and one white.
Well, if I could do that, that's the toughest question ever. Yeah. Besides the question, what is your favorite one?
Yeah.
I would take Syrah and I would take Viognier.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're going full Northern Rhone.
Yes.
makes total sense. So what is your favorite wine? No, okay. How about this? We'll end on this. What was, not your favorite glass ever, your favorite bottle, but what was the last bottle, and not from here, so non-Ontario, take Ontario out of it. What was the last great bottle of wine that you remember? You go, damn, that was good.
Honestly, was a brisket a couple of weeks ago with my friends. We have enjoyed a couple of Beaujolais Gamays, mm-hmm. and the flavor concentration is unforgettable in there, and that flavor profile will be in my brain for the rest of my life now.
By the way, a very Ontario answer, Gamay, one of the grapes we do really well. Hey, Vadim, I appreciate. I know how busy you are. Again, when I arrived, you were just finishing cleaning up, and you're getting set up for an event, and you know I'm sure there's 100 other things you have to do. It's a cool story. It's a great journey. I love the LCBO booting you out. And again, just thank you for the time. Congratulations for everything here at Cassava and for everyone. Where can people find you? We didn't even promote. Where can people? My God, I'm a bad host. Where can people find you?
Well, you can always find us here at Cassava Vineyards and Winery in Vinelands. We are right on King Street, so really easy to find us.
Yeah.
You can also find two of our wines in LCBO stores, mm-hmm. An Oak Chardonnay and the Cabernet, pretty much exclusive to LCBOs. Mm-hmm. And please do ask for our wines at your local restaurants. Quite a number of them does carry it in Ontario, primarily in Niagara region, but we are slowly but surely expanding to Toronto market as well.
Vadim, thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much for having us.
Thanks so much, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.